Welcome to Sunday Sermons and other recordings from the Unitarian Universalist Church of Davis, California. Please visit our website at www.uudavis.org for further information.
Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Davis. I'm Beth Banks, senior minister for this congregation, if you don't know me.
And I'm Autumn Labbé-Renaud, worship associate for today.
So as Unitarian Universalists, we believe that people have inherent worth and dignity, and here we create a community that draws upon the wisdom of many traditions with respect for our individual understandings of God.
We welcome you to this church with your whole self, with your questioning mind, with your heart that yearns to connect, with your doubts and your fears.
So let there be joy in our coming together today, where happiness is stretched thin in our world. Let us be guided by compassion and by tenderness. To acknowledge all that is being held by the people in this room. We light one pillar candle for the sorrows of this world, for the moments that weigh heavily on our hearts, and that is true for each one of us in different ways. And we light one pillar candle for the joys of the world, for the moments of hope and celebration. And now, let us center ourselves through music.
Many Unitarian Universalist congregations light a chalice at the start of worship each week. A symbol with its origins in World War II, it has many layers of meaning. The light of reason, the warmth of community, and the flame of hope. Our chalice reading today is by Carl Seberg. Let there be joy in our coming together this morning. Let there be truth heard in the words we speak. Let there be healing for our disharmony and disrepair. Let there be silence for the voice within us and beyond us. Let there be joy in our coming together. Now, our chalice lighters today are doing double duty as ushers. So, Cliff and Jerry Omart, are you with us? There's Jerry. There's Cliff. They've been attending UU church services since the late 1990s and recently became members of this church. When Jerry began attending, she was very excited to learn that there was no dress code that included she must wear nylons. That's a vestige. That's a vestige from the churches of her youth. Our dress code is joy. Both Cliff and Jerry continue to be inspired by the thoughtful and spiritually nourishing services here at the UU Church of Davis, as well as by the sense of community. And Cliff will be taking on a new role as worship associate this year.
Yay.
Thank you.
All this has to do with joy. It's all about joy. So I want to know how many people here today have some cash. Don't be shy. Who's got some cash in your pocket? Check in that pocket. We're a little concerned because fewer and fewer people are actually carrying cash in their pocket. And you were asked to bring that today because today we are doing a fundraiser for Families Together. And Families Together is a program that was started by the Episcopal Church here in town. And they brought two families here who were seeking asylum. Why would anyone bring their family away from their home to find asylum? I'll bet you have the answers. People who are under my shoulder in height, answer first. Why would someone come here from another country and run away from their home. Fear. People under my shoulder height first. Anyone else who's under my shoulder height that might know that? What might be happening in their country? And anybody, what?
Violence.
And war and drug wars and drought and famine. And maybe violence against women. And other things, too. What was that?
Fire.
It could be fire and flood. All the problems with our environment. The problem is they don't know if they can stay here. But they want to. So we have two families here in Davis who are seeking asylum, and our government has allowed them to come. They can't work for the whole time. The parents can't work while they're here. And so this church is one of three congregations, the Episcopal Church, the Methodist Church, and our congregation, who are helping to support those two families, one family with children and one without, to pay for everything for their time here while they wait to find out if our country will say, yes, you can stay here in safety. Our job today is two parts. The children are going to be baking sweet goodies over at the Bridge House. Not eating them, as far as I know, but cooking them. And our job, the others who are here in the sanctuary, is to find that cash and to buy cookies and brownies for an exorbitant fee. Knowing that all of us together are supporting these two families who are here seeking safety in our country. There is a great joy in coming together. And this is the whole thrust of the sermon. I'm giving it to you right now. You can go out and eat cookies like in a minute from now because I've just given you the sermon. In giving to others and putting the emphasis not on yourself, but in your connection with other people and their well-being. And so our children are learning that it's actually fun to do that together. And that we are stronger together than we will ever be apart.
As part of our preparation for today's service, Reverend Beth and I read the Book of Joy, which is Conversations Between the Dalai Lama and Archbishop Desmond Tutu, along with writer Douglas Abrams. I know you'll hear more about it later. This reading is from that book. Acceptance, whether we believe in God or not, allows us to move into the fullness of joy. It allows us to engage with life on its own terms, rather than rail against the fact that life is not as we would wish. It allows us to not struggle against that day-to-day current. The Dalai Lama has told us that stress and anxiety come from our expectations of how life should be. When we're able to accept that life is how it is, not as we think it should be, we're able to ease the ride, to go from that bumpy axle ride with all its suffering, stress, anxieties, and dissatisfaction, to a smooth axle with its greater ease, comfort, and happiness. So many of the causes of suffering come from our reacting to people, places, things, circumstances in our lives rather than accepting them. When we react, we stay locked in judgment and criticism, anxiety and despair, even denial and addiction. It's impossible to experience joy when we are stuck in this way. Acceptance is a sword that cuts through this resistance, allowing us to relax, to see clearly, and to respond appropriately. The heat, is intense. Standing at the edge of a 12-foot-long swath of hot coals, I'm aware of my breath, of the hammering of my heart, and to a lesser degree, the people surrounding me, the beating of their drums, the rise and fall of their voices chanting, supporting me. Breathing deeply, I wait a minute longer and let a sense of calm envelop me. I raise one foot, let loose a yell of power, and walk across the coals, across a barrier of my own limitations and self-doubt. And I do it again and again, at one point dancing across the coals with my future husband. This particular fire walk was my first, and I've done several in the years since. But that night, I went to the 3-hour workshop that preceded the walk, absolutely convinced I was not walking. I knew the workshop was meant to fully prepare us. I heard all the things the instructor said, that we use 10% of our brains, that we've spent our whole life arguing for our own limitations, and that overcoming them could be transformative, even life-changing. I also knew that not walking was an option, and that would be okay. And while my brain really doubted my ability to do this, the rest of my body was getting ready. And then standing at the edge of that fire, I felt a profound shift. It wasn't about conquering the fire or having power over it. It was about matching my energy with that of the fire. It was about believing in myself. I felt a sense of joy and possibility I had never known. I emerged from that evening physically unscathed, but wholly changed. Until the moment I walked across those 1,200-degree coals, I had never felt such unfettered joy. It was a feeling rooted in exultation, busting through my own boundaries and limitations and celebrating my body and my mind. I felt like I could take on the world. You know, I actually find joy kind of difficult to capture in words. And I think that's because when it comes, I'm embodying it, not analyzing it. But in the Book of Joy, there's a passage that describes the work of the Dalai Lama's friend, Paul Ekman, who has cataloged an incredibly long list of words associated with joy. From this list, it was exaltation that spoke to me and steered me to this memory of my first fire walk. There's no better way to explain how I felt that night, victorious, accomplished, exultant. And for many years, that experience served as a yardstick for other accomplishments. Whenever I got stuck, I'd think, I walked on fire. I got this. More importantly, it taught me for the first time in my life that joy and exaltation could come from within me, from my thoughts and actions, not from others, not from the vagaries of life. I still call up that image of the firewalk upon occasions when I feel stuck, and it's still an affirming experience, a reminder that joy is sometimes metaphorically and literally achieved only after persistence and walking through fire.
When you see that word hope, do you keep wanting to sing that song, that word? That's why every now and then I hear a few hopes around the room. Well, we had quite a time with this book. And so it sat on my pile of reading for almost a year. You know, the pile that gets higher and higher and... Yeah, I learned about a new term. It's actually a piece of furniture that I need to buy. It's called a book tower. A friend of mine had a picture on Facebook of a dress she bought, and in behind her was this book tower. And I said, yeah, the dress, yeah, the dress. What's that? Well, it was supposed to be my summer reading for enjoyment, and I anticipated that it would really be the focus of this service. It had a purpose to be read. And I expected that I would be inspired by that ongoing conversation in that book between the Dalai Lama and Bishop Tutu. I mean, how could that not be inspiring? But what I didn't anticipate was how I would start to see joy in the most unexpected places. And I've come to agree with all the authors I read, and it was a rabbit hole of joy, that joy is, it's essential to our survival. In May of 2019, the New York Times columnist and author David Brooks wrote about staying vulnerable in what he called an age of cruelty. What a thing. He wrote about the emotions that are found at graduation ceremonies. For people who are graduating, he said, there is happiness. They have accomplished a goal. The journey may have been filled with challenges, but they have succeeded and they are done after all. They are graduating. But David Brooks describes the emotions of the families and the friends who are sitting in those uncomfortable chairs or bleachers. He describes those emotions in a different way. They feel joy, he said. The difference is that they are watching the delight in another person's face and remembering their progress and how they emerged with new skills and confidence. They can imagine all the steps along the way. The families and the friends are not necessarily, although they might be, thinking about themselves. Their focus is out there. He wrote, joy is the present that life gives you as you give away your gifts. Happiness usually reflects accomplishment or victory, but joy, really deep joy, that sustains and strengthens someone always involves getting beyond a focus on ourselves. The reason that the children are doing the project they're doing today is intentional. It came out of reading this book. How can we give the children an experience of focusing on what is out there and people out there and do it together? You can substitute any ceremony of recognition, whether it's a graduation from the university, which is David Brooks's original example, or reaching a milestone, a year of sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous. One person has the power of happiness, but those who offer the support, who know the journey, who have supported that person, they know joy. David Brooks tells his readers, put yourself in situations where you're more likely to experience that kind of joy. In the Book of Joy, the Dalai Lama explained that the lessons of Buddhism tell us that we are interdependent on every level, socially, personally, subatomically. And Desmond Tutu spoke about the interdependence that is cultivated from such a strong sense of a shared well-being that people greet one another not by asking, how are you, but how are we? The key to joy is a focus on the well-being of whatever is beyond ourselves and that thread of energy that connects us. So 2/3 of our attention is beyond ourselves in the other and in the connection. Paul Ekman is an emotions researcher and one of those jobs that I never knew existed, and a longtime friend of the Dalai Lama. His list of feelings, well, you know, Autumn started with a list. It includes the emotions of pleasure and wonder and ecstasy and exaltation and gratitude. And Buddhist Matthew Ricard adds rejoicing enchantment. And spiritual radiance. It's likely that Desmond Tutu and the Dalai Lama experienced joy at the level of enchantment and spiritual radiance. And I want you to let me know if you see me walking around radiating. But I think I have not done enough work to get there. Later in this sermon, I'll share the story of someone who is a lover of words and bees and honeysuckle, whose commitment to joy is as strong as these luminaries. And he may seem a little bit more in our world than these two religious world leaders. Joy isn't a luxury. Everyone I read agrees with that. It's the key to the survival of our human dignity and our hope. Although we may experience flashes of joy when tasting bittersweet chocolate ice cream, mine personally, smelling the lemon tree's blossoms in spring, or feeling the delicate softness of a cat's ears, there is a deeper, more sustaining level of joy available to us. And cultivating this kind of joy is a spiritual exercise because we have to prepare the way for it, the way autumn prepared to walk on fire. And part of our preparation is to befriend fear and even pain. Even pain. Recent research suggests that 50% of our happiness is determined by our genes or temperament, and they call that our set point. The other 50% is determined by a combination of our circumstances, over which we have little control, it's true, and our attitudes and actions, over which we have a great deal of control. The practitioners of joy, no matter what their faith tradition, say that they cultivate its presence in their lives. And to cultivate, I did some digging around. To cultivate means to cut through the earth, to turn it over, to prepare it for new growth. And we don't passively prepare our lives if we cultivate them. It means we intentionally make decisions that draw us into connection with humanity, even though we will be loved and brokenhearted, delighted and disappointed, find common ground with others, and be grossly misunderstood. And here's the challenge, that we will continue to be open with the fullness of all of that. And if sometimes we can't feel connected to humanity, then turn to this living earth and sink our hands into a garden, walk in the woods, and I think the new language is to forest bathe, to immerse yourself in the forest. Even Kaiser is talking about forest bathing. Look into the night sky and see the summer meteor showers. Or if that doesn't work for you, discover the presence of people through history who serve as mentors. Accept the guidance of their lives, now past. The cloud of witnesses whose struggles, achievements, their character give us strength and give us resolve. There are many ways. Our work in finding joy is to choose to actively keep our heart and our soul open and look for how we are an integral part of this larger whole, not the center of the whole, but a part of it, maybe even on the edge. If you haven't come across the writing of Ross Gay, then consider this your introduction. He writes about joy in The Book of Delights. And his writing laces together his life as a gay black man who loves language and the sound of words. He said, I love some phrases. And I think, damn, that was a good piece of writing. He loves gardens and how they remind us of how life can nourish us. And his writing is precise, intense, and sometimes cutting, always truthful. In answer to the question, how can we possibly be joyful in a moment like this? And we are in a moment. And this is a question that he and the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu and David Brooks all mention as the one question they can be sure they will be asked every time they speak at a gathering. How can we possibly be joyful at a moment like this? Ross Gay answers that joy is a calling. And I want you to imagine it calling to every one of us. Precisely, it is a calling precisely in a moment when our society sees hate being modeled. And the call is, find your joy. At a time when at the dinner table, my nephew's son, who was a junior in high school, said, I want to go to college in Canada so I won't be shot when I attend classes. I need to have the practice of living with joy already at hand, right with me. And when families who seek asylum from dangers in their home countries are detained in our country under bridges just within our southern border, and they are sleeping on stones that bruise the tender skin of children. Ross Gay believes in this time we need the presence of that rejoicing enchantment, or what he calls a fierce, radiant joy, so that we can find the strength to respond. And when he was asked, how can you find joy now in this time, he answered, it is by having access to deep and sustaining joy that I, as a black gay man, will have the strength to labor for the life that I believe is possible. For me, he said, it's not at all puzzling to find that joy is possible in the midst of difficulty. And he adds, joy has nothing to do with ease. It has nothing to do with ease. Adult joy, now there's another word, adult joy, is constituted as much by our sorrow as it is by our happiness. Both Desmond Tutu and the Dalai Lama agreed that nothing beautiful comes without some measure of pain or stress or frustration or suffering. I didn't like that. Ross Gay was in his garden walking aimlessly. He loves his garden. Casually swiping the sharp blade of a sickle across the plants that had gone to seed. He nibbled the remnants of blackberries, watched the bees in the lavender, and felt the sun warm on his shoulders. It was June. It was a perfect summer afternoon. And he leaned over to pull up the garlic bulb that would add just the right flavor to the potatoes and chard he planned for dinner. And the muscles in his back seized into a knot. It would be the better part of a week before he said he could even stand upright without pain. Why, on this beautiful afternoon, when he had no cares, he said, food in his garden, a full refrigerator, all his bills paid. Why then did his body betray him? Well, his body did not betray him. It was remembering what his mind had pushed aside. And the story starts in such a predictable way. I wish I could choose another story, but I can't. And I have reason to believe that everyone has heard a story similar to this one, but hear this one again. Ross Gay had been working late at the university, preparing the requirements for his tenure. It was 11 p.m. on an early summer night with townspeople still out and about, people walking, bicyclists out. And he saw the flashing blue lights of the police car in his rear view mirror. And he decided he would not respond with that inner fear or outward overcompliance. And Ross Gay thought to himself, I pay taxes and I obey the law most of the time. And this officer is therefore my employee. But I won't tell him that. But Ross Gay looked directly at the police officer, didn't avert his gaze, and politely asked why he had been stopped. The officer asked for license and registration. Why was he stopped? The car's license plate light was burned out. And he said, I didn't even know that my license plate had lights. And the officer asked, do you have any guns in the car? Any drugs? Have you been drinking? You don't have anything illegal that I should know about, do you? I'm sure someone's going to say yes to that. And he just said he started looking through the front windshield. No, no, no. He remembered how his friends had been pulled over and threatened or hurt. He knew what we see in the news. And he was a little ashamed by how he considered this small incident. He allowed it to slip into his body and how it waited for him to lean over and tug on a bulb of garlic, and how that memory had remained coiled in his body, only then exploding in pain. His body had not betrayed him at all. How can we possibly be joyful in a moment like this? How can he be joyful? And yet he says it is his calling. He has discovered that his life's work is a study of joy. Not the study of joy in books to read about it, but the challenge of living joy, which is countercultural, which takes building that muscle so it is always ready for us because we don't know when we will need it. The joy that sustains him started in something that happened in his garden 3 weeks before that late night drive home from the university, and this is the real story. Ross Gay had bought his first hive of honeybees, 9,000 of them, 9,000 honeybees. He had always loved bees and their song and the feel of them walking on his skin. He wasn't afraid of them. And this was his first time, he called it, to negotiate with the bees, to convince them that they should leave their transit box with honey water and move to the hive of his garden. And he was not an experienced bee whisperer who quietly sang to them or gracefully moved them as some of his friends did. He didn't call them his little girls. Unfortunately, his bees had already started to create a honeycomb in their temporary transit box. They were busy already. You could say that they were attached to it. And to make matters worse, he had pried open the box and damaged the honeycomb, had ripped it apart. And the bees had noticed, let's just say. He had to cut loose that broken honeycomb, and it took all of his focus to keep fear from taking over his body. And he heard that bees can smell fear and they can smell anxiety. And in that moment, instead of imagining them as peaceful honey makers, he saw them as an angry, swarming creature, 9,000 of them. That's what popped up in his mind. And their singing went up an octave as they became more anxious. And he wrote that he held back tears, tears of fear. But finally, the new hive was ready, and thousands of bees flew through the air, and some slowly transferring the honey from the broken comb to their new home. And he leaned over and helped the bees who had gotten lost in the thick grass and offered a finger to each one, transporting each lost bee up to the hive, all whole. And he whispered, climb up, little one. You can do it. And in that moment, he was outside of himself, and he was that connection to their home. He was the parent at the graduation or the encouraging person at the support group. When the danger of the bees sensing his fear had passed, he became aware of a vision that he had imagined in the midst of his fear. He had seen himself pouring gasoline on the hive, this hive that he loved, and completely destroying all of the bees. And it was as if the bees, and if it is true that the bees can sense rage and anger, Ross Gay concluded that the bees had a much deeper connection with him than what they could sense in his imagination. They sensed a deeper truth in him. They had flown around him, settling into the new hive, and walked across his finger, letting the stinger just touch his skin, but never harming him. He could feel it drag across his finger. He believed that they found a deeper truth in him than he could see in himself. And when the bees were safe within their hive and doing their bee business, his connection, the sense of himself in this web of creation, became clear to him. And he couldn't stop his body from shaking and the tears from flowing. Ross Gay was pulled over for a burned-out license plate light. And he tried to make sense of why his body carried within it trauma, waiting to tie him in knots of pain. But by his own admission, he was called to look for joy, a joy of connection that places his connection with life beyond himself. He found it in a relationship with nature and in his garden and with 9,000 honeybees. Joy isn't a luxury. It's the result of the spiritual practice of cultivating our relationships in the world, and they are rich with possibilities. No one can do this work but each one of us. We have to find joy. But then when we most need that joy, it is for each of us, the fierce and radiant joy, to strengthen us in times of struggle and discouragement. And it is for us to reach for that enchanting joy, or that joy of radiance, when we want to feel at one with that which we love. So may joy be ours. And may we cultivate it and all the work that it takes together. Amen. I invite you into a time of prayer and a time of meditation. The prayer that I will lead you into comes from the Book of Joy. In remembering our bond with others, reflect on all the people who are responsible for your life. Your parents who gave you life. Your parents who cared for you. Your teachers who taught you. The people who grew your food, made your clothes. And think of those who created our housing, the crops, the medicines that keep us alive. Think of the ancestors who lived so you could be born. Who braved hardship so you could have the life you do. And the family and the friends who give our life meaning and purpose. And allow your heart to open and experience love and appreciation for all of these people. Experience the enormous joy and appreciation that comes from being in touch with all that has been given to you. How we are so much stronger in our togetherness. And so we extinguish our pillar candles. And may the pillar of sorrow be extinguished. And may our sorrows be lessened by our time together. And may our joys be amplified in this time. And we extinguish our chalice, but not the seed of truth that we hope we have found here, or our ability to live it during the week until we see each other again. So go in peace. Deeply regard each other.
Truly listen to each other. Speak what each of you must speak. Be ready in every moment to disarm your own heart.
Rejoice in this love that you have begun, and let this gathering say, Amen.